Welcome to the Watering Hole Podcast. I'm your host, Mary Riemann. The Watering Hole is a place to come and quench your thirst for meaning, nourish your hunger for inspiration, and feed your need for connection. Featuring inspirational talks, curious conversations, mystical meditations, and other artistic expressions, exploring themes on life, spirituality, nature, mystery, and so much more. So meet me at the watering hole, and together, let's drink from deep waters. Well, this morning, I wanted to spend some time reflecting on what compassion is, because I think compassion is a real spiritual workout. It is not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing, even though the word compassion gets tossed around a lot. I don't think it's a very easy thing. And by the way, the world is divided, fragmented, isolated. It appears that it is a very difficult thing to come by. So I wanted to spend a little time thinking about compassion and what it is, right? As most of us know, compassion comes from the Latin that means to suffer with or to suffer together, to struggle together, right? A synonym for compassion is loving kindness. It comes when we join hearts, right? But it's accompanied by a desire to relieve that suffering, to relieve the suffering of another being, another person, even the earth. So compassion does require empathy, but they're different things. Empathy is a willingness to take on another's perspective and feel the emotions of another person, right? And this is the basis of all authentic compassion, right? It's an increased capacity to take on multiple perspectives. So it's the expansion of one's heart through the opening of our minds. But empathy is fueled by a willingness to understand, right? Empathy is fueled by a willingness to understand, and true understanding cannot come if we're defensive, if we're reactive, if we're fearful. True understanding can't come if we're asking a person about their position just to have the opportunity to defend ours. That does not lead to true understanding. It doesn't even lead to true empathy. And when we do that, we cannot even access compassion, right? And I see a lot of that happening right now, a lot of that. When we're in that state of defensiveness, being reactive, being fearful, we don't actually see what is. We're blinded by emotion. We can be blinded by the certainty of our being right, of our thinking that we are right and justified. And we can be blinded by even belief, by our own beliefs. So if compassion is going to have a real chance at taking root these days, we have to be honest about where we are on the path of our own healing by being willing to identify the ways that we remain harsh with ourselves, right? Or where we are harshly opinionated of others. And all the other ways that we are divided internally because of judgment, bias, righteousness, hubris, defensiveness, all those things, habits that have hardened over the years, that have hardened us and sort of made us crusty, right? So compassion, as I said, even though it gets bandied around a lot and has really become something that we think of as sentimental and sappy, in all actuality, it is a strong and true way to approach healing. But it requires a lot of inner work, and I think that's where the rub is, right? Many people don't want or don't have the wherewithal to do the necessary inner work that can open the floodgates to compassion. And as long as our hearts and minds remain closed, fixed, or certain, we'll continue to divide and conquer through further categorization, exploitation, and domination. I think if compassion is truly embodied in heart and mind, it can be the salve that we need to soothe suffering and bring about healing. And when we bring about healing, we bring about transformation. We bring about transformation. The good news is that compassion, I think, is something that's innate in us. It's built in, right? Children remind us of this. Children are great reminders of this. I've told this story probably too many times, but in the not so distant past, Amanda and I were with some friends who had two little girls, like 6 and 4. And the 6-year-old was crying. She was suffering, right? And we're sort of standing back and watching this. At least I was standing back and watching it unfold. And I'm watching the 4-year-old who is totally tuned in to her 6-year-old sister. And the 4-year-old starts to cry with her 6-year-old sister because she feels what her sister is feeling because she's connected. Right? I mean, we know that. We know that when someone we love is suffering, we suffer. We suffer. That's why we say none of us are free until all of us are free, because if someone we love is suffering, we are likely suffering with them. And so metta meditation helps us address the suffering and helps us relieve it. But I'll get to that. I'll get to that. I think it's so important for us to realize that thoughts and emotions create energy fields that precede us, right? They go out before us. So our energy reaches others, whether we intend it or not. So it is absolutely essential, critical, that we become conscious of what we are thinking and feeling in every moment. And that's why I'm saying this is a workout. This is a workout. It demands our attention. It demands our energy. It demands that we know who we are. And listen, having compassion is actually good for us, right? Scientists have found that when we feel compassion, our heart rate slows down. We secrete that bonding hormone, oxytocin, and areas of the brain linked to empathy, caregiving, and pleasure, light up. And that results in an increased desire to be a helper, to be a helper. Seems like the world could really use helpers at this moment. But often our crustiness gets in the way, right? Our own hard-heartedness becomes a barrier to compassion. I think the primary cause of our own crustiness, you know, is fear. It's fear, and it comes to us through indoctrination. It comes through us through conditioning. It comes to us from our own life experiences. And so it's important that we really begin to look at our fears. I mean, just think for yourself. What happens when we fear someone or something? What happens when we see someone or something that's totally different from us? What happens when we see an ugly spider? We kill it. And we do the same thing to humans. We kill it, we distance ourselves from it, we protect ourselves against it. And fear arises from feeling threatened, right? When we feel that our safety and security is threatened, when we feel that our health and well-being is threatened, when we fear loss or death. So we are living, are totally surrounded in a culture of fear. And it's being thrown at us all the time. I mean, just watch the ads on TV that tell us that you're not enough and you need this pill. But if you take this pill, here's all the side effects, right? Like, here's all the side effects to be afraid of. I mean, it's just, and it's just blasted at us. Be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. You can't trust anyone. You can't trust anyone. You can't, you know, and so it's important for us to really begin to look at the ways that fear touches us and motivates us. Fear is one of the biggest motivators, and oftentimes we're not even aware of how it's motivating us. So just think about it, right? What are the universal effects of fear? What does it do to us to be afraid? To be afraid of not having enough, to be afraid of losing our income, our relationship, our status. What does it do to us to be afraid of our own darkness and shadow, to be afraid of the hate that we hold, so much so that we won't admit it or even look at it, to be afraid of the ways that we other people? What does it do to us to be afraid of other people, of other people's perspectives, other people's beliefs? What does it do to us to be afraid of change or difference or the unknown? And what does fear look like? Like, it's important for us to begin to know what fear looks like, how it manifests in ourselves, how it manifests in our culture. Could it look like defensiveness? Could it look like hubris? Could it look like anger? Could it look like the insistence on being right? Could it be expressed as violence? Could it look like aloofness or indifference? Could it look like sadness or depression? Could it look like a lack of compassion? I think it could. So we've got to really begin to look within ourselves and find the barriers to compassion, right? Fear is one. Judgment is maybe the next biggest one, right? That inner critic. If I'm in my inner critic, I have no fucking compassion for myself. I truly believe that judgment and compassion cannot occupy the same space. They cannot occupy the same space. I'm either looking through the lens of judgment or I'm looking through the lens of compassion. You know, check that out for yourself. I've really been looking at that in myself to see if that there's truth there. And I know with it just for myself, when I apply it just to myself, that there's truth there for me. A few other barriers, I think, are competition, right? This idea that someone has to be a winner and a loser, or that some, you know, meritocracy, that some people deserve XYZ and some people don't deserve it, right? Comparison. Just watch yourself when you start to compare yourself to another person. Watch what happens to your energy. Watch what happens to your self-talk, right? It becomes a barrier to compassion. And lack of compassion results in fragmentation, in further fragmentation. And hard-heartedness, right? We get that fuck them attitude, right? Which leads to dehumanization, right? Putting people in label cages, seeing people, you know, as the enemy, as the villain, as, you know, the us and them. I cannot tell you how much I'm hearing right now in our midst large swaths of people being put in categories. Those assholes who won't get vaccinated, those assholes who XYZ, those Trumpsters, those liberals, those conservatives, it's not helping us get to compassion. That is not helping us get to compassion. It's not. And so we've got to start looking at the ways we do that, because that's the ways that we divide. And where is that division coming from? Got to get to the bottom of it. If we truly want compassion to flow, if we truly want healing, if we truly want healing. And so we got to learn to access it. We've got to learn to access it. And how do we do that? First and foremost, we do it by relaxing. That's why I've been so focused in our warm-ups on relaxing, right? I heard recently that one of the, and I'm not going to be able to cite this, but I will try to look for it later and send it. But I heard recently that one of the greatest comorbidities for COVID is fear and anxiety disorders. Fear and second, it was second on the list that I read. Fear and anxiety after diabetes, fear and anxiety disorder. And we are bombarded with, you know, this be afraid, be anxious. And so learning how to relax, how to tell yourself, I'm okay. I have everything I need. No matter what happens, is one of the ways that we strengthen our heart center so that we can be available to compassion, so that we can be available for compassion, even for ourselves. And the truth is that everything is uncertain. Everything is uncertain. I can walk out from this building today and be hit by the, as Rita Sear used to say, be hit by the beer truck and be gone. So we got to really look at our fears, at what's going on inside us, so that we can relax with them, so that we can come and be present in ourselves, in our own bodies, right? And start to relax with ourselves. So accessing compassion comes through relaxation, letting down our guard, right? And that requires that we know when fear is truly called for, when we are in a dangerous situation, and when it's just the monkey mind, when it's just habit or conditioning or indoctrination telling us that we need to be afraid. And we got to really start to look at that and parse those things out, right? When we parse those things out, what comes forward? The heart. Here's another huge key. Just fucking be gentle with yourselves, right? Just be gentle. Let's just be gentle with ourselves. Again, you look for yourself, but when I am in that place of being the inner critic, I'm not being gentle with myself. And unless I can silence the inner critic, that gentleness does not come. It does not come. And I'll get mired in that harshness and hardness. And I get crusty. And it's hard for me to access that molten core that is at the center of my being, that is compassion, that is connected to all that is connected to you. So being gentle with ourselves, and again, letting go of judgment, which in a way is connected to forgiveness, right? Letting go and letting be. Because when compassion flows, love grows. It's expansive, and you can feel it when you have been, when someone has shared their compassion with you, when someone has shared their compassion with me, I feel that expansiveness, and I feel, you know, that it sort of wraps around me, that infinite source of love wraps around me. When compassion flows, there's ease of being. Because there's a remembering, like a remember being, that we are all members of one body. There's a remembering. The fact is, we are embedded in interdependent ecosystems, both natural and cultural. And while there is differentiation in these systems, there is no disconnection anywhere, anywhere. And we've got to remember that. We've got to actually allow ourselves to feel that, that we are held within, you know, circles and circles and ever widening circles of love and connection. So when compassion flows, healing happens. It happens inside me when I can be compassionate with myself. I begin to heal. Those hard edges begin to soften, and I begin to feel more freedom to actually be who I am. So when compassion flows, we give each other permission to be who we are, who we really are, which is the shining ones, right? We're made of star stuff. We're made of cosmic stuff. We are the shining ones, but our light gets crusted over. And unless we take the time and the energy and attention to break through that crustiness, our light gets hidden. And the world needs our light right now. And we can be that for each other. But we've got to start with ourselves. We've got to start with ourselves. Because compassion flows through you and me, or it doesn't flow at all. If we don't consciously choose to pursue compassion, if we don't consciously choose to face and heal the divisions and disease within ourselves, how will a new reality emerge? How will it? It won't. It just won't. We are the Earth's only hope of making the world a better place. We are the Earth's only hope of making the world a better place, a healthier place for all its inhabitants. And the good news is that all the compassion the world needs, all the generosity that people need, all the courage that we think is lacking in the world, is right here. And right here with us. It lies within us. And when we make compassion the primary work of our lives, healing happens and transformation comes. It comes. One of the most accessible ways that we can encourage the flow of compassion is through metta meditation, also known as loving kindness meditation. In its simplest form, metta meditation is intending and sending the energy of loving kindness to a wounded person or place. It's holding an intention that the one suffering be free from suffering. And every one of us can hold that intention. Just imagine how different this world would be if each one of us held that intention that the energy of loving kindness surround and infiltrate those who are suffering, both individually and collectively. Even this world, right? The land, the rivers, the air. We can hold that intention for all of reality, right here and right now. We get opportunities throughout the day to practice this, right? One of the things I'm playing with lately is really being open to noticing the ways that I'm impatient, because impatience leads to frustration. It leads to anger. and it's based in an expectation that something's not working out the way I want it to, that something's not exactly quite right, which is a lack of acceptance of what is. So I've allowed myself to play with that somewhat and really have asked my inner self to show me all the ways that I'm impatient. And it's been enlightening, to say the least. But let me just say this. In the car, great time to practice compassion. When somebody cuts you off, instead of flipping them the bird, I've started to hold them in my heart and send them loving kindness. When someone's going too slow for my liking and I feel that frustration rise up, I send compassion and I hold compassion for myself, that I'm where I am supposed to be right here in this moment and everything's okay. And frankly, nothing's bad is going to happen if I'm late. So we can start exercising and accessing compassion right where we are with whatever we are facing in life. And to me, that's good news. That's good news because we have it within us. And if we have it within us, that means we can carry it into every circumstance and every relationship that we are engaged in and make the world a better place. One person, one experience, one thought and intention at a time. So this week, practice compassion. Thanks for listening, everybody. I look forward to meeting you right back here at the watering hole. And as Mary Oliver said, go easy, be filled with light, and shine.